Thank you for joining us today as Pastor Tim shares the Word of God. Our prayer is that your life will be touched by the Spirit of Almighty God and constant, powerful truths that can be applied to your everyday life. Let's join Pastor Tim with today's message.
And we often miss seeing God and hearing from God because we have in our minds got a secular and a religious separation, and we go to church and we do something spiritual, and then we go out here and we make a living in our daily life. When if we would just open our eyes throughout our day, God is revealing things to us in the natural about things in the spiritual. God moves and uses us throughout our day everywhere we are. And God is not interested in physical buildings, but he does use the physical to illustrate spiritual truth and to facilitate his work. And the building of this meeting place and the building that we are in keeps us out of the elements and keeps climate control and gives us a seat to sit in. Yet in the building of this building, we have so seen how God operates. So many lessons about life that we can learn just through natural course of events. And for all of us in life, as we get into our day and what we're going to do in this service today, I want you to look at what's happened here in the building of this building and learn lessons for your life about how we're supposed to live life and how God moves in and with and among and through us. But I want you to know in life, the most important thing is to have people. To have people in your life, because God uses people to speak to you. God uses people to facilitate what he has called you to do. Because what you're doing can't be done by yourself. Whatever that is, it takes people. And God uses people to speak his word to you. And we don't hear God because we are too busy connecting with people. Oh, that's so-and-so. Oh, that's so-and-so. I've known him for 20 years. Instead of, wait, God just spoke to me through that person. Sean O'Keen, his wife Amanda, and their kids are here with us. Sean, we were talking about building this church, talking about what we needed. We had, 150 people, 175 people. So we were looking at maybe a 350-seat building. We needed to build something for us to meet in. And so we were looking at that. And Sean said, Tim, I need to meet with you. And Sean came to meet with me. And this whole direction of this church changed. Sean, you and Amanda, y'all stand. Sean, we appreciate you. Appreciate you and what you have meant to this church. Sean works for Caterpillar, but see, he doesn't separate religious and spiritual. That doesn't mean anything to him. Everything we do is religious. He works for Caterpillar. He's got a program in his computer in the Caterpillar system of measuring church growth. He came and had printouts, and he said, I want to show you just putting our church in the Caterpillar system. Oh, that's secular. Why you want to do that? See, that's not the way God sees it. Let's put this church and let's look at projected growth in this community. Let's look at what is happening out here in this area. And he said the most tragic thing our church can do is to build a building, outgrow it in 3 or 4 or 5 years. It's right in the middle of all the property we own. Now what you going to do? You didn't build with projected growth in mind. And Sean began to explain projections and growth to me and going through these charts that I didn't know anything about. And he says, we have to have a 1,500-seat auditorium to handle the future growth of this community. Oh, Lordy. And I'm blown away. I mean, $3 million, $5 million, what in the world is that going to cost? It just no way, it, no way. So, you know, I don't know how to do that. And the thing is, we don't need 1,500-seat auditorium right now, but we can't put an auditorium here that we're going to outgrow. What are we going to do? I'm at loss as to what to do. Totally at loss. But I knew that when Sean left my office that I'd heard from God. I knew that God had spoken a word of direction for this church, and he had Sean, and he used him mightily to provide direction for what we're doing. Good friend of ours that's here from Graham, Texas, Fred and Pam Goff. Fred calls me and says, Brooks, got some property out in West Texas, 4,000 acres. There's no way to see it except on horseback. I want to ride and figure out what to do with it. So I take my horse and my camper out in the middle of nowhere, and so we ride horses 3 days over this property with canyons all in it, out in the middle of absolute nowhere. And while I'm there with Fred in the camper, I pull out our church plans every night, roll them all out on that camper table. Fred, what am I going to do about this? And I tell him about my meeting with Sean. I tell him about where our church is. What am I going to do about this? And Fred began to talk. But if you will pay attention, as Fred talked, I knew as I was sitting in that camper that God was speaking to me. God was speaking direction for this church. So I called Fred and I said, Fred, I want you and Pam to come today. Fred, you and Pam stand. Appreciate you. Fred began to explain to me about building this thing in phases. He starts drawing on these plans that I had scratched all on this piece of paper that you couldn't even hardly tell what we were doing. And why don't we do this in phases? And Fred says, what needs to happen, and the church never does this, people need to learn to pay as they go, not borrow a bunch of money and pay as you go. And I knew as he said that, I knew God was speaking to me. I knew God was speaking direction for our church. 8 years ago, Alan Bates and I went to Branson, Missouri, and we met with a draftsman up there. Showed him a bunch of the drawings that all of different church members had come in, and we'd been working on this thing, and we had, and it really wasn't building drawings, but it was, if I was there telling you, oh, okay, I can see that. And so we took these to a draftsman in Branson, Missouri. He looked at them. Alan and I met with him, and he said, yeah, I can draw those. And he works on it and works on it for a while. And then he calls me and says, I'll draw y'all's plans for $92,000. I was planning on spending about $10,000 on the whole building. $92,000 to draw us some plans. See, there's no way. There's no way that we can do that. But in life, you will always reach a point where there's no way that you can do what's in your heart to do. And you'll always reach that. I don't care what you're doing in life, if you're doing anything. If you're not doing anything, well, this doesn't pertain to you. But if you're doing anything, you will reach a place where there is no way for me to do this. And when you're in that place, you have two options. Number one, you can quit. You can give up and you can say, I can't do that. We can't move there. We can't build that. I can't accomplish that. Number one, you can say no way and give up. Or number two, you can find a way. You can figure out how I can do this. So you always know when you come to those places in your life, you got one of two choices. No way I can't, or I'll find a way to do this. In life, there are two vital things that you have to have for success. Number one, you have to have people that know a lot more than you know. And you need to surround yourself with those people. You need to surround yourself with people who know more than you know about what it is you're trying to do. And then number two, you have to listen. See, a lot of folks surround themselves with good people, they don't listen. I see a lot of teenagers that won't listen to people who know more than you know. Oh, you know everything. I know you do. It's just not working for you. You surround yourself, and you are surrounded by parents, you're surrounded by uncles and aunts, and you're surrounded by people who know more about life than you know about life, yet you refuse to listen to somebody who knows more about you. Number one, you got to have somebody that knows more about what you're doing than you do. And number two, you got to be willing to listen to counsel from those people that know more than you have. I have a very smart brother-in-law, very successful, big commercial projects. And I love brother-in-laws because what you can do is threaten to bring the sister back and you support them. So you can either help me or you can have your sister back. So I call my brother-in-law. Man, Lise, y'all family, y'all stand up. Y'all stand up. I want our church to meet my family. From AMR Construction Company in Little Rock, he said, well, Tim, bring your plans over here. Let me look at them. Met with Manly. Manly's dad, Tate Roberts, been in business longer than Manly and I put together. He took all that mess that I had and took it down in their basement. And for free, he drew the plans for this building. Well, I appreciate the plans, but now what am I going to do? And Manly said, well, let's come over and put it up for you. And so here we are today. Here we are today. You got to have people. You got to have people that know more about what you're doing than you do. And you got to be willing to listen to them. So it's no surprise that when we got ready for phase two, Manly was the first call I made. In life, you have to have people. And you have to have successful people. I'm always amazed at who people choose to run with. Look at the fruit in their life. Look at what they're producing in their life before you decide to be best buddies with them. Young people, you judging my friends? As a matter of fact, I am. They're losers. And what you've got to do is you've got to look around and you've got to see, is this person producing in life what I want in my life? And when I see people producing that, when I see Manly building what he's building and I know that's what I want, then I'm going to associate myself with people who are going in the direction that I want to go. Don't get around a bunch of thugs and think you're going to go somewhere in life. You have to have people that know more than you know, and that's who you hang with. And then you've got to be able to listen to their input. Why? Seriously. Why do you want a relationship with somebody who is going in the opposite direction than you're going? Sean is my kid's age. He graduated from this school with my kids. Now, clearly he's much smarter than me in the growth of business and building planning. Clearly he knows a whole lot more than I know. I can make a choice in pride and in arrogance. That snotty-nosed kid ain't gonna tell me anything. Or I can recognize the fact that he knows more than I know about this, in spite the fact that he graduated from our school and is my kid's age. And I can learn from somebody who knows something that I don't know. Or you can let your pride and your ego keep you from success in life because you are too smart to listen to anybody who's smarter than you. And you got choices to make in life if you're ever going to go forward in your own personal life. I heard from so many people, Tim, you can't build that building there. That building's on a swamp. For those of you who don't know, this is on a swamp out here. It's on a swamp. We needed over $500,000 worth of dirt work done here before we could even get started. Well, what are we going to do about that? Well, as a matter of fact, I was going to answer the phone when the highway out here was putting in this third lane all the way up number 7, and they were looking for a place to dump hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of loads of field dirt. Did we happen to have a place that that could go? But all of that fill was brought in here for absolutely free, but it's still sitting on a swamp. You can't build a building on that swamp. So I called my brother-in-law Manly. I said, Manly, we got a swamp over here. He said, Tim, half of Little Rock is built on a swamp and all of Louisiana is built on a swamp. You just got to know what you're doing to be a swamp builder. Since I don't know, won't you come over here and do that? He said, all right. I'll come over and put that building up for you and it's not going to go anywhere. And the geological studies that they did, this building is sitting on concrete piers that if the whole bottom of this thing goes down, this building is going to stand right up because of the way it's built and the way it's designed. Here's the way you do this. I'm just telling you, nobody wants a family member and for sure a brother-in-law telling you what to do. Because in family gatherings, you have to be arrogant and act like you're the smartest one in the family and everybody there is lucky to have you a part of this family. You know how that goes. We wanted a stage to drive on. One stage. We ride horses and chariots and camels and sheep. And what we was, I had three different companies come out here from Hot Springs. Oh, you can't do that. Told Darren and me, oh, you can't build a stage. Oh, you can't do that. We stand there. I called Manly. Man, I need a stage I can drive on. He said, well, I just built a parking deck with 500 cars parked on it. Surely we can get a stage you can drive one on it. See, you got to find people that know what you don't know. You don't say, well, I can't do it. He told me I can't do it. So I call that guy up and say, why don't you get you a lawn chair and watch me build a stage that we're fixing to drive on. Catch you a seat right over there and watch what we're fixing to do here. See, you can in life, you can quit because they said I can't do it. Or you can figure out how to do it. You can figure out how to do what's in your heart to do. And the only way you're going to do that is associating yourself with right people and not with a bunch of thugs that aren't going anywhere. One miracle after the next. One miracle after the next. I could go on and on and on all morning long about what we have done here debt-free. This is an exciting day for this church because I'm just telling you, if you don't know much about churches, you don't find many that are debt-free. That's in a building program. You just don't see that. And here we are. Everything in here is paid for. It's an exciting day for us. We're going to take a tour here in a little while and to our building because you need to see what we're doing. Many of you have not even been back there, so we're going to go back there and see what we are doing back there. Before we do, we've got some things we need to do. Find Philippians chapter 3 and Deuteronomy chapter 4. You can put two ribbons there. Because I can't wait to share with you. Philippians chapter 3, verse 12. I don't mean to say that I've already achieved these things or that I've already reached perfection, but I press on to possess that perfection for which Christ Jesus first possessed me. No, brothers and sisters, I've not achieved it. But I focus on this one thing, forgetting the past and looking forward to what lies ahead. I press on to reach the end of the race and receive the heavenly prize for which God, through Christ Jesus, is calling us. Verse 13, forgetting the past and look forward to what lies ahead. Deuteronomy chapter 4, verse 9. Deuteronomy chapter 4, verse 9. Watch out. Be careful. Never forget what you yourself have seen. Do not let these memories escape your mind as long as you live. And as a matter of fact, be sure to pass them on to your children and your grandchildren. Never forget. Woo. Now what we're going to do. The title of today's message is Looking Back and Looking Forward. As we study the Bible, we see God's kids forgetting all that God has done for them. All that God has done for them, delivered them from slavery, a series of miracles. I mean, parted the Red Sea, walked on dry ground, covered Pharaoh's army, water from a rock, manna from heaven to feed them. You can't forget what all God has done for you in your life, or the next obstacle you face will take you out. We read over and over again about fear, about worry, about complaining. And it was all because they forgot what God had done. What God has done for you. Now think about this. Through your life, to get you to the place where you are right now, to build faith in your heart, look at what all God has already done in your life. And when you see what all God has already done, then you are convinced that He will see me through this obstacle that I'm facing right now. Show of hands in here today. How many has God seen you through a tough time? Dear Lord. God, you know God brought you. Many of you, the shenanigans you pulled, you ought to be dead right now. Not only did God see you through, He's kept your stinking life alive from where you ought to be. Well, whatever you're facing today, whatever your crisis you've come with right now, as you look back in your life, let it build faith for what you're facing today. Our past victories are important because they build us up for the difficulties that we're facing right now. David faced Goliath. David was a lot weaker than Goliath. Goliath was much bigger, much stronger, much more prepared for battle. David was way outmanned. But what gave David strength to face Goliath was the fact that there was a lion that was bigger than him, stronger than him, faster than him. He was outmanned. You know what? As a matter of fact, I just now remember there was a bear that was bigger than me, stronger than me. I was outmanned by a bear, and God saw me through. I was outmanned by a lion, and God saw me through. See, David's past victories gave him faith to face the giant in his life at the present moment. The Apostle Paul in Philippians writes to forget the past because he's addressing the problems of living on past hurts and past pains that control your life today. You get around some people, and all they talk about is what happened to them and how they were wronged and how they were hurt and how somebody messed them over and how 10 years ago, 15 years, 40 years ago, somebody used them or abused them or messed them up. And they just continue to live in that. If you'll remember, the guy that writes, forget those things behind and press forward to things ahead, persecuted the church. He stood there and oversaw the stoning to death of Stephen. Now, you think you have bad dreams and I'm tormented by my past? Watch somebody get rocked to death. How many hits in the head by a rock do you have to take before you die? And that man watched that gruesome thing that he was overseeing take place. There are things and hurts and pains in your life that you have to forget and let Jesus wash that memory out of your mind, and you got to press on what lies ahead, or what you've been through will destroy you today. And you've got to let the healing power of Jesus touch you. And it's only through old things passing away, all things becoming new. Can some of you let yourself get over the abuse or the hurt or the pain that you've lived through? Paul said you have to forget the past. Your sins are wiped away. You're a brand new creature in Christ, and you've got to push for what lies ahead. Truth is today, many of you have had horrible images in your head. Past horrors, hurts, pains that you can't even describe, crisis, loss, devastations. Some of you at an early age suffered abuse that no one can know the torment, the verbal abuse or the physical abuse that you endured, that you went through, and you can't even communicate the hurt and the pain. And it's only through Jesus that your past can be done away with, and you can have a brand new start in life. It's only through Jesus that your past can be washed away. Sure, you're going to remember it. The Apostle Paul didn't have amnesia. He didn't forget the stoning of Stephen. He didn't have amnesia, a mental loss. He remembered that, but through Jesus, you remember it in a different way. It doesn't control you. It doesn't still direct your hurt and your pain in life. The Apostle Paul's mind was changed, and he then lived with the mind of Christ directing his movement. You can't live with regret. You can't live hating yourself about what you did or didn't do or should have done or what you could have done to stop that from happening. You can't live hating yourself, and you can't live hating somebody else for what they did. You got to let it go. The best analogy that I can use in teaching these two scriptures today, as you drive your life down the road of life, you drive your car with this illustration. It's important that you have a rearview mirror, and you need to see what's behind you. You need to see that. But I don't know if you've ever noticed, in proportion, the size of the rearview mirror and the size of the front windshield, because you better have a lot more looking ahead than you do behind. Behind is important, and we need to be able to see what's coming behind us. But your main focus in life has got to be the road ahead of you. We've got to see. Yes, we've got to see the lions and the bears, the past victories that we've had in life. But our focus is to be on where we're going. As long as you're alive, As long as you're still alive, your focus is on where you're going. Your focus is in the future. Your focus is on what is next for me. Remember the past. See where you were. See where you are now. See all that God has brought you through, and let it build faith in your heart. The Bible uses outward natural things to show and to illustrate spiritual truth. All Jesus's parables, he used farmers planting and coins and landowners going on a long trip and grinding the meal and millstone. And God uses what we see in everyday life. And church, we've got to stop overlooking the things in our everyday life as we're out here making a living and miss what God is teaching us through the daily things that we do in life. It's not on Sunday morning when you get a Sunday school lesson. All day long, through what you went through, God will just show you something about spiritual truth in what just happened to you. We've got to let what we've been through build faith in our heart, and we've got to look for the next step ahead. And since God uses outward, physical, natural things to teach spiritual truth, today I wanted to teach this sermon of looking back and looking forward. And to illustrate that, I want us to see where we are in this building and where we have been and where we are going, and allow today to build faith in your heart for what's facing you. We were in a gym. We'd outgrown our church. And every Sunday, because if I didn't, I meant to. We set up chairs. We set up a stage. We set up a sound system. We set up lights. It was never good. Because you always got shorts and squawks and because you're in a gym and you're setting all of this up. And it was just the best we could do. And you know, we learned real quick what goes up must come down. God bless y'all. Have a great week. Before you go, we got to take all this down. Everybody hang around for another 30 minutes. So we're here, we took all this down. And try as we may not to ruin the gym floor, dragging that stage across it, we tore the thing smooth, slap dab up. Dragging stage across gym floor. I mean, setting up, tearing down, setting up. The biggest problem wasn't the setting up and tearing down, is we lived limited to what the church could do. We lived very limited to what ministry that the church could be doing. Hurry up and get out of here. We got a basketball game starting in just a little bit. Hey, we got high school ball practice in here in just a few minutes. Hey, we got school starting. The bell's going to ring. So we were very limited in what our church could do. I mean, we couldn't do a week-long seminar. We couldn't have things that we wanted to have in that gym. We were very limited, but we did that for 10 years because that's all we could do. I'll never forget when God spoke through Fred about paying for this building as we go. Dividing this thing up in phase one, phase two, and then phase three, the balcony's going right in here. Those steps out in the foyer that you come in that go up and you always wonder, what do those go to? Well, really, they don't go to anything yet. They go to phase three. You're going to go in, go in those steps, and where that wind is and that wind is a framed-in door, and you will walk in to the balcony that'll be right here above these chairs. That'll be phase three of this building. So when I got a hold of the fact we're going to pay for this thing as we go, I got the girls in the office. I says, okay. Makes a big thermometer. Big one. Big poster board. This big thermometer. And then put 50,000, 100,000, 500,000, 1 million, 3 million, 5 million. Okay, how much do we now have? We got $20. Where does the red line go on that thermometer for $20 when you need 5 million? Now we got a little red line down here, and it's Sunday morning. I got that thing, I got my easel, and I was walking from my office over to the gym. And I'm telling you, as clear as I'm here today, God said, what are you doing? Well, what's it look like I'm doing? I'm going to carry this over and set up a church. He said, well, that's going to be good, because single-handedly, you're about to destroy this entire church in one fatal swoop with this move. So go have a good Sunday. You're going to tell people that have $20 that we need $5 million and see how much excitement that produces in them. Do what you want to do, but I suggest you don't do this. on a Sunday morning, 7 o'clock in the morning. I'm down here getting ready to set up. Eyes turned, walked to that dumpster, and I threw the thermometer, the easel, I threw the whole thing, dumpster. Little lady, Bertie Johnson, that started this church with my mom, she gave us $20. Had a little envelope for building fund. I got that envelope. I got her $20. Bertie was a big gardener. She grew everything she ate and everything most of us ate. So I took a seed, a pot. It's a big old clay pot Bertie'd grow in. And I taped her envelope. It said seed. And I taped it on that pot. And I took that to the church and I set that over there and I threw her $20 in it. I said, we're going to grow us a church building. Anybody want to get involved? Get involved. I said, here's the deal. If we had $10 million, we don't need it. All we need is $10,000 to do this part right here. If we had $10 million, all we need is $50,000. All we need is $75,000. All we need. And so we just had no, I was asked all the time, Tim, what's that building going to cost? I don't know. I don't even want to know. Because if I did, I'd just go jump off of a cliff. All I know is we need $78,000 for this next step. If you're going to eat elephants, you need to do it one bite at a time, not the whole thing. But yeah, the church is going to dive into this building program and you are destroyed before you ever get off of the ground what's in your heart to do. Whatever God's called you to do, you don't look at the big picture. What's the next step? And that's all you need to concern yourself with. It's just what's the next thing you need to do? What's the next thing you need to do? And so to this day, what's it going to cost to finish that building? I don't know, but here's what we need right now. And that's what we did. That's what we did. And money came into that clay pot. And from the day we started working on this building here till the day we moved in, we never had no money. But as it came in, we spent it and we never stopped working. So I was going to pour this floor and skateboard on it for 15 or 20 years while we waited for enough money to get. But as we got the floor, we got the metal. As we got the metal, we got the skin. As we got the skin, we got, and we, it just, money continued to come in. See, if you won't let the bigness of your obstacle in life wipe you out of life, if you will just take the next step toward where you're going. But see, because where you're going is so big and so unattainable, you won't even take the first step toward where you're going. Today, I want us to see a miracle. I want us to look back and remember it. I want to teach our children today. Some of these people that are here today weren't even born when we started this. Some of our young ones. I want to teach our children. I want to teach our children's children where we were, and I want them to see how we got started in this building in 2011 and 2012. Because watching that ought to build great faith in your heart for where we're going. Let's give him some praise. You know, as thrilling and as exciting and as powerful as all that was, I want to make sure that you know you can't sit. Because I see churches all the time, big, beautiful facilities. They were the biggest facility, they were the prettiest, and they were the newest in their town 50 years ago. And there hadn't been one thing done on that property in the last 50 years. And I watch now what's going on in that place. I watch churches that build buildings, and then that's all they do. They've arrived, and they got their building. And you see big, beautiful buildings that seat 500 people. And now they've got 70 people going to church, and their youth group is 97 years old. In your life, you have to move forward. You've got to keep moving forward in your life. And we get our addition finished. I'm often asked, well, Tim, does that about do it for y'all? I mean, when you get this done, and now your campus, and are y'all, boy, that ought to just about have you fixed up. Seriously? Are you kidding me? We got a high school to build. We got a junior high to build. Our elementary school needs all of our facilities right now. Look, as long as young people right now are being taught and they come out of school not knowing what bathroom to use, we're going to have to add on to our school around here. We don't have a choice about what we're doing here. As long as there's one person. See, as long as there's one person out there, we're going to have to reach that one. Because here's who I'm concerned about. I'm concerned about the man that's working up here at the convenience store that's going to get shot and killed. But if I could get that kid in our youth group, it'd turn everything around, and he'd go and apply for a job there instead of go rob there. See, if we could get that kid in children's church and raise him in this ministry, we'd keep him from being in jail and us having to spend $50,000, $60,000 a year to support him while he's down there in jail. See, if we get, there's one kid that's going to go to jail. There's still one teenager out here that's going to rob a convenience store and shoot the owner. There's one person out here that's going to rob that bank up there and kill two or three of those tellers in that bank. And what we got to do is we got to reach them before that happens. Are you kidding me? No, we're not done. We're just getting started. As a matter of fact, when we get into this new addition, we will, for the first time in the history of this church, have enough people to do what God's called us to do. We'll have enough people to enable us to reach this community and to have the effect that God's called this place to have ever since we started. If this ministry, let me just digress here, stop. This isn't, if this ministry isn't in your will, it needs to be. It needs to be. Because we got to stop worrying about us in our Sunday morning. What we got to right now in America concern ourselves with is our kids and their kids' kids. What kind of America will they grow up in? And if the church does not lead America in biblical morality, who do we think is going to? And so what we're going to do is leave our money to ensure that the church infuses America with biblical principles that will allow two generations from now to think right, act right, raise their kids right, and to live right. No, we're not finishing. We're just getting started. We're just getting going here. As long as you're alive, there's still a purpose for you. We've got to move forward. We've got to take the next step. This church can't let up. There's one more family to reach. There's one more kid out here that we got to get a hold of. There's one more person that we've got to educate. There's one more marriage that we've got to talk to. I mean, we've got to reach these folks. And if you think that our Christmas plays have been unbelievable around here the last few years, we're leaving a 400-foot stage, and we're about to go to a 4,000-square-foot stage that I'm going to take you and show you. We're going to have the facilities that we need to do what God's called us to do. We're going to have 5 nights of a Veterans Day play that we are going to, through drama, instill in the hearts of people a love for America and the desire to keep America free. Because we're not having that anymore in this society. And we're going to do that through drama, through a week of Veterans Day plays. We've got Christians that don't even know what Christmas is about. Through a week of Christmas plays, through a whole week of dramas for Easter pageants that we're going to put on that reenact what took place in Easter, so you don't get up and read some little Bible story, you watch it unfold before your very eyes, and it will be on the scale that people will drive from out of state to come here to bring their families to see what this church is doing. We've got a lot facing us right now. Yeah, well, we got a full church, and while we're doing good, and in 50 years, what we can have is 30 little old people sitting around in here in a big building if we don't keep moving forward.
We hope that you have been blessed, encouraged, and motivated by today's message. If you are interested in more messages by the pastors at CM Church, please log on to our website at www.cmchurch.com and click on our podcast link. You can also purchase series and other messages at our online store.